Hey, hey, friendos. Welcome to The Road to Nowhere, a Marvel Champions LCG podcast. We focus on recapping Solo Champions League, but if you enjoy breaking down the finer details of a Marvel Champions matchup, then we have something for you. I'm your host, Joss Aru, and with us during this in-between season breather, I'm delighted to be joined by our Solo Champions League commissioner, Innsmouth Bear. Innsmouth Bear, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I really look forward to this, so I'm excited for today.
It's always a really, really fun chat. And I mean, you know, some of the stuff that's been happening in the background on the Discord is a bunch of folks that are saying they're going to go to Con of Heroes.
Yes, yes.
And so there's going to be a bunch of us that actually get to meet each other in person for the first time.
Yeah, and besides that, I've been working on the schedule for this season, obviously. And we're going to end this season like the weekend before Con of Heroes. So we're going to wrap up season 14 and then I'll get to hang out the next weekend.
That's amazing. I'm glad it doesn't like spill into because a lot of us are that are bad at doing our homework on time. Wow. Would really struggle with that.
Oh, I am part of that list. I think most of the rounds this past season I did in the last 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how many people are, you know, rocking my white guy with a bald head look, middle-aged white guy with a bald head look. It'll be, you know, all those
classic things.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I always tell my wife I went somewhere and 40% of the people there looked like me. It was weird. Anyway. So what else have you been up to? How's your other league been going?
Solo Crisis League is doing well. We just started season 14 there and we're just in the round 2 already. So we're playing around with a few things this season. I mixed up how hero selection is done in that league to bring back some of the ones that have been kind of ignored the past 13 seasons. So just playing around with things there, just like I play around with them in the Solo Champions League.
And then I know we had a longer conversation about this maybe that was last time, but did you start that league first, or how are you ahead of this one?
Yeah, Solo Crisis League actually started first.
Okay, gotcha.
So I was inspired by someone else's Solo Marvel Champions League to start my own, and I actually reached out to them in hopes that we could like kind of cross promote and stuff. But then that league kind of crumbled, and in that void, I just decided, okay, I'll just cross promote them by doing them both myself. So that's how that happened. But yeah, they were a season ahead by the time I started the Solo Champions League.
Gotcha. Well, and I know there's always, you know, little things get stretched out on holidays and all sorts of other reasons too. So I could imagine many situations in which you had started either of them first.
Right, right. And there's all sorts of planned and unplanned things, like you said, but like I've been trying to artificially stretch out one league or the other so I can at least refer to one season number in my head at all times.
Oh, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, if only all my kids had the same birthday.
Yeah, right. Get on that.
It'd be brilliant. Well, I think I'm
at least
month. Yeah, I think I've stopped with kids, so I don't think I have any. I mean, I grew up in a house where my parents actually just tried to have us all celebrate our birthdays as one birthday party, and we're spaced out by about 6 months, so that didn't ever feel the best. But you know, here we are.
A friend of mine's family, they have a tradition where there was two siblings, and the sibling always had to give the other sibling a gift on their own birthday so that no one was left out.
Yeah, I could see the reasoning behind that, but I could see how it didn't feel good. So today the plan is we're going to talk about season 13, a review we just wrapped up. I mean, almost 2 weeks ago now, but you know, it still feels pretty fresh, and season 14 preview. So that's the thing that's on the horizon. There's some hints that you've been dropping about season 14. So some folks might know a little bit about what to expect. And then you made the very fun offer last time we did this to let me design one of the rounds. So you're going to let me design round one, and you actually have no idea what I'm going to bring to you. So this will be a very fun chat that we'll have. And then you have a super secret announcement.
It's true, I do. I'm really looking forward to see what you build, because as the person who's basically designed the first 13 seasons here, I'm interested in seeing how someone else approaches it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that what comes out the other end might not be radically different from anything else, yeah, but right? how I get there might be, you know?
Yeah, I'd love to hear those thoughts along the way.
So, you know, as a reminder, folks who are tuning in for the first time to hear one of these season previews, Innsmouth Bear has been on starting back at episode 7, I think was the first one that you did, and there was a nice big history of the league that you gave that time. So anybody who's curious, you could jump back to episode 7 and hear a little bit more about how the league came together. And then we always have a little bit of added color to that each time we talk. But that's kind of a good place to start for folks who might want a little background info. But I mean, let's jump into the season 13 review. What do you have to share? Yeah.
So, I mean, there were some pretty obvious things. We introduced sinister motives. So we got to see Miles, and we got to see Gwen. And then we had, what was it? It was the Sinister Six and Sandman. Those are two popular ones, I think. So I was really excited to play those. Those are honestly my two favorite rounds this past season. I didn't get enough time to play Gwen and Miles in my own private time. So really sitting down and playing them a lot for this season was a huge blast for me, because it was like fresh content almost, even though it's almost a year old. So using that, we also had a team building theme that kind of crossed the season. So what was it? In round one, we had a whole group of champions, and for a few of them, the Avengers that inspired them. For round two, we had the Sinister Six form their own team. Round three, we had the Guardians. Round four, we had Miles Morales, and again, the Sinister Six showing up in a modular set. Yes. And then for the end, we had a bunch of Avengers who have some kind of... they were all kind of built around changing your form in the hopes that people would really take advantage of that as much as possible. So
I totally missed that thematic piece.
Yeah, see, I caught that in your thing. Again, you were you talked about how they're all Avengers, but yeah, they're all trying to play with forms. Like Black Widow has a lot she can do from alter ego, and then all the other ones have like multiple forms they can switch into. So that was the idea there, at least.
Gotcha. Well, the dunces missed it. What are you going to do?
No worries. Not a problem. And then there was the self-assessed difficulty. This was a new question on the submission form that you could submit. And basically what it was trying to capture how the round felt. And I'm not even just the round, that attempt. So attempt to attempt, you might get scored the same, but maybe this one you saw Shadows of the Past, or this one you saw Your Obligation multiple times or something. So it was just a way to kind of capture how that round was different from the other ones, as well as how it reflected across the league. How that information is going to be used is kind of TBD. I'm just kind of gathering it right now. Mm-hmm. But my idea is that it can somehow influence XP in the future, but most likely it's just going to be a few seasons before that's the case.
So did you have a chance to look at some of the data there? Like what sort of things might you have learned?
So the league is very good at figuring out the difficulty of a round on a relatively consistent scale. So even though there are some outliers of like someone putting a 10 or like this one was super easy, most people are within like two or three numbers of the average or even the median of all the data collected on that. So people are really in tune with how it feels. And then there is obviously outlier rounds where people just got hit with the worst of the worst of the worst. And you can see that, and it matches like the comments they left in it. So a lot of people who rated like a 10, they always explained why in the comment section of the form. And it was really interesting to see like what things made it a 10 difficulty for them.
Gotcha. You know, I, as you were talking about it, I was reflecting on, you know, as the season went on, I wasn't necessarily kind of creeping up my difficulty significantly. And I think for me, it was often about how that specific game felt compared to how I kind of felt the games would go based on practice games. So, I mean, obviously I recognized as the games were getting more difficult, but it was like you said, I would see Shadows of the Past or whatever. And so even on the really easy ones, I might actually rate it as a little bit harder, if it just went way slower than expected, for example, right? Not that I ever felt like I was in peril of losing the game, but I just went slower and I was like, come on, like I knew I could get it way faster than this, in the practice games. And then some of the harder ones, maybe even when it did feel like I was actually on the ropes a little bit, from the practice games, maybe I kind of had that expectation, so I didn't necessarily crank it up to an 8 or something like that. But so I'd be curious to see kind of how those things match up to some other people's experience as well.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track there. There was a lot of things where like two people had 14 rounds, right? And one person would say there were 14 rounds, but I was in control the whole time. And one person would say it was 14 rounds and I was on the edge of darkness the entire time. So those are two different ratings to something very similar.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, you know me, I also love data, so I'll always be curious to see kind of what you learn from all this and how you are able to turn it around as something that you can feed back into the league. That'll be really cool. So you, as you mentioned, we saw two new heroes, two new villains from Sinister Motives. And I mean, I think those, broadly speaking, the heroes from this wave were pretty popular. So I think there's going to be lots of excitement out of some of the new heroes coming next round as well, which we can talk about in a bit. And I think Sinister Motives as a box of villains was also pretty well received. Venom Goblin maybe a little less popular, but I think the rest of the villains were, by and large, reasonably well received. I think some people found some of them very frustrating because they can be, but kind of a pretty positive overall, I think, on this wave. So, and I'm really personally looking forward to continuing with the content on that wave.
Oh, I definitely am too. Again, for me, it's with the exception of Venom Goblin. I do like how all of the villains feel in that set. I do feel like I'm fighting Mysterio when I'm playing that set, and that's a lot of fun.
And do you have any particular heroes you're looking forward to that we haven't seen yet from that wave?
Spider,
Yep.
Penny. That's my absolute favorite of that wave.
Okay, very cool.
It is a powerhouse when I play her. I really enjoy the setup and just letting her loose once I have it.
Well, I'm from a league perspective, I'm kind of excited to see Spider-Ham because I know, like Doctor
Oh,
Strange,
yeah.
that you'll bring the difficulty up to kind of match his power level, and so that'll be fun too. I enjoy, again, Doctor Strange is not somebody I would typically play on my own because I just don't really, find him that interesting. But the way the league adds extra layers of challenge to some of these things, Doctor Strange is all of a sudden really interesting when you're trying to do it as quickly as possible and you're fighting Ronan and all those other things. So I think Spider-Ham's, pretty powerful hero, and it'll be fun to get somebody who's going to really make him rise to the occasion.
Yeah, it will be. It will be for sure.
I'm not digging for hints, by the way, just commenting on that. Yeah, so that was really fun. I enjoyed the thematic pieces, kind of looking at each round and thinking about it a little bit. I didn't catch them all, but I still think that was fun, and it was I also appreciated how you kind of dipped your toes in the box, but also made it so that we knew that there was going to be a bunch more things out of that wave that were going to be coming.
Oh, they are. There's plenty to come.
Yes. But like not that we didn't see the entire box in one wave or in one season. That felt
Right.
good. Some nice anticipation from it all. Season 14. What do you got in mind for new things? Or
He's
what might be coming back?
Season 14 is going to have a lot of big changes. I'm calling it a pretty ambitious season for everything I'm trying to implement this season. So the team building theme of last season was kind of like dipping my toes into limiting how I build around, basically, and by sticking to that theme, right? So in this one, we're going to start introducing a narrative element to the season. It'll be a self-contained story. It's not going to be like pages long of dialogue or anything like that. It's going to be like one or two inspiration sentences before the beginning of a round. And it's going to interconnect the season into one big story.
Very fun.
I have a title for it, but that'll be revealed after the conclusion of round one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, as the story evolves, sometimes you'll be able to make choices based on the story, which may change your setup a little bit for as compared to other players. And the narrative will continue regardless. So kind of like however people choose to play their round, it's going to influence the story. Lost my space there. The other thing that we're going to see is a little bit of a shift in how the difficulty ramp works this season. We already did in season 13 where the old round 5 became round 3. So those old really hard expert games became just more difficult standard round 3 games.
Yeah.
We're going to move that up to round 1 this season. And
yes,
it's not something that's going to happen regularly. It's just something to serve the first point in this narrative that we're trying to tell this season. So we are going to have an intentionally difficult round 1. I hope that doesn't turn off too many new players, but for the fact that we had new players in a Ronin round, I'm going to say that some people are still going to stick around, knowing that it's only easier from here.
Okay, so can I pause real quick just because it is a thing we forgot to discuss during the season 13 review, but just kind of that notion of taking, you know, the last one of these episodes that we did, you talked about how you've divided up the modulars and the villains into 3 tiers based on difficulty, and that you had pushed kind of what previously lived in round 5 into round 3, but in standard.
Correct.
And we didn't have a chance to check in with that. I just wanted to comment. I think that was really successful. It made it really fun to break out some of the more difficult challenges, but not feel overwhelmed by them. And then it also meant that, like you did kind of roughly tier 2, I guess, in round 5. And like that, I think that was a pretty good round 2. Now, you know, I mean, it wasn't 100% win rate or anything. And it definitely felt like there was a challenge there, but it felt less like this huge spike at the end and just kind of this intermediate spike and a late spike too. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm glad it felt that way, because that was fully the intent. I said this in the supporter chat a long while back, but my goal with Ronin was to someday throw him in a standard difficulty round and then put him away for a long, long time. So right. That day has come. We got a standard difficulty Ronin out of the way. And I was actually really proud of round 5 this season, because it was more of a puzzle as opposed to a challenge. Like that particular setup is more of a puzzle in how you approach it. And all of those heroes are a bit of a puzzle in how you play them, with the exception of maybe Ant-Man, who I feel like can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the intent of that round 5, and I'm glad that translated well for players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, carry on. I just wanted to make sure we got to discuss that in there.
Yeah, of course. No problem. So that difficulty change is going to that difficulty ramp change is going to continue through future seasons, because I think it was very successful. But we are going to switch it up really quick for season 14 for round 1 that you built and mm-hmm. are going to discuss with us soon.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be, you know, the old round 5, the new round 3, and this season's round 1. So we're going to see what challenge you built for us.
Oh, so this time round 3 might not also be a spike.
No. So I moved it around to try and keep so instead of having 2 very difficult rounds, in a translation way, I'll just say it's going to be like 3, 1, 2, 4, 5,
yeah,
as opposed to 1, 2, 4, 5. If that makes sense.
Love it.
Yeah. So we'll still go up from there, but it's going to be easier after round 1 for a bit. So this season, we're going to introduce a lot of new things. So I've teased this before, but there is that Civil War leaderboard on each of the results pages.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's the various teams, be they Avengers, Web Warriors, Guardians, etc. And they all kind of get ranked based on how the heroes of those groups perform, based on, you know, they have those traits, so they're part of this group. End of story. The goal of this season is to kind of use that board in a way that's a little bit different and really open up a lot of choices for players. So what's going to happen after round one is a player is going to choose a team, and there's going to be four teams available: Champions, Guardians, Web Warriors, and X-Men.
Mm-hmm. Now,
after you do that, after you play a game as a member of one of those teams for the rest of the season, unless the story otherwise permits, you have to stick to that team. So to make this work, each round is going to be three heroes available from each of those four teams. That's 12 heroes available each round. That is a lot.
And I shouldn't say each round. Oh, I understand. I got it. Okay.
Yeah, I should go back a little bit and just say, it's not each round. In during a choose your hero round, there's going to be three available
from each team.
From each team, yes.
Gotcha.
But you are limited to the team that you've already committed to. So you're only going to have three choices available to you. And as I said, one of them is X-Men. We have not played X-Men yet in this league, but every single member of the X-Men team that has been released and should be finishing up releasing this month, I believe, is going to be available this season. So if you're one of those people who wants to play the new, you might want to say from, you know, round two, when this stipulation starts, that I'm playing X-Men all season. And you can do that. That's going to be available to you. If you had a lot of fun playing the Web Warriors last season and you just want to do that this season, that's available to you. And if you want to finish out the Champions, that's available to you. And if you want to go way back and just play like a bunch of basic decks of Guardians, that's available to you. So you can choose your playstyle pretty early on in the season. Now, you're still going to be limited to what heroes you can play and what aspects are available, but you know, you can have a better understanding of what to expect when you commit to a team early on, since they do have that synergy that kind of goes across each of those groups.
So you've created yet another scoring nightmare for yourself.
It's true. you're not wrong there. And I will address that in just a few seconds here. So one of the questions that's bound to come up is, how does this affect alliances?
Yeah.
Alliances are still going to have the same stipulation where they have to have different hero and aspect combinations for each player. Now, that being said, not every member of the same alliance has to be following the same team. For instance, in Ursa Major, me, T. Eberly, and Greg might decide one of us is a champion this season, one of us is the Web Warriors this season, and one of us is X-Men this season. And then there will be less overlap, but we can still have discussions like, hey, we're playing different heroes, but we're both playing aggression. How can we build our decks? How can we help each other build our decks for our individual heroes? So I think it's going to open up some different conversations within each of the alliances.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be one special rule. So let's say an alliance, every single one of you wants to be a member of the Champions. And that's totally doable, because while there are only three options in a choose your hero round, I'm going to allow some overlap as long as all three are represented. So you'll be able to say, if let's say it's Nova, Miss Marvel, and Ironheart, as long as all three of them are played and all in your whole alliance is Champions, then the two remaining members can repeat two of those options in that round, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Yep.
Do you have any questions about that? I know you had one originally.
No. You've definitely answered that, and I've been running, doing quick counts in my head of the different factions and how many heroes there are in each. So.
Right. So for some of those, that's going to be a very limited selection, right? So yeah. I believe for Champions and Web Warriors, there's only like four apiece. And if you're seeing three heroes in each of those rounds, you're going to see repeats of some of those.
Yep.
In fact, quite a few of them. But if you're doing Guardians or X-Men, you might see all of them once, maybe twice at most. Mm-hmm. So depending on what you have in your collection and what heroes you want to play, definitely keep that in mind before you start the season.
Right. Yeah. That seems very fun. And I know people are going to have affinities toward different ones for a variety of reasons. I mean, Astrodar, of course, will be Guardians, because that's where the power in all of us is mighty.
Yeah, so that is what I assumed.
Perfect.
That's exactly what I thought when I was making the season.
Yeah, but anyway, Guardians is like the best place to play Gray.
Right. So.
Very cool.
Go ahead.
No. This is going to be very fun. It's one of those decisions that halfway through the season, I'm going to be filled with regret. And, but I don't mind that kind of regret, you know?
No problem. So obviously when we're having 12 heroes in a single round and varying groups playing them different ways, there's going to be some questions about scoring. And there already is questions in our current XP system, right? I mean, we're all well aware of it at this point. There's a great conversation in the Discord actually started by you, Josaru.
Yep.
And I would encourage anyone who has thoughts on XP and how it currently works to give their thoughts there, because I am watching it closely. The most popular option right now, not only with myself, but seemingly with the group at large, is like a Mario Kart style of approaching what kind of XP bonus heroes get. And I really like that idea. It really excites me because I really enjoy how the season results work right now, which is, you know, that similar style.
Right. You've already piloted something along those lines.
Right. So translating that to a new, new set wouldn't be that difficult. And I really would be interested in seeing how the results work out. That being said, I don't feel like I have time to implement it properly for this season. So it's definitely something I'm considering for the future, but it's not going to be in season 14.
Well, not only that, but I mean, with 12 heroes, that's kind of an insurmountable challenge, right? Your groups are too small.
Right. There's a good chance only two people play Wolverine this round. So yeah. it's not really fair to judge it that way.
Yeah.
So instead, what I'm doing is another suggestion that I agreed with, and that is narrowing the gaps in XP.
Right.
So we saw this a lot this past season where, you know, a hero might get 50% more XP or even more than another hero. And, you know, that hurts, as you've mentioned and other people in the Discord have mentioned as well. So what I've done is limited the gap between the maximum and minimum hero bonus, the hero and an aspect bonus, because there's a bonus applied to your XP based on your choice. And I've minimized that gap to kind of stop that swing or at least bring it down. Now, there's a few other things I've done. I'm going to go into a little bit of calculation detail that I don't normally.
Oh, you're speaking my language. Do it.
I know, right? Up to this point, there has been a skill score, which is used to determine your flight, right? It's the non-XP stuff calculated together and helps kind of put you with players of your skill level, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of an invisible score in the background. I'm going to tell you right now that score was out of 85. And XP was out of 15, totaling, gotcha, ta-da, 100.
Right.
So instead, moving forward, or at least of this season until a new XP system is implemented, your skill score is going to be out of 100, and you can get a bonus points from XP of up to 10. So this does increase, you know, your maximum score, but it does also decrease the influence of XP on your score while also decreasing the gap between XP scores. So you're going to get a lot more influence from your skill score in this season. We'll see what that means. And with all the different heroes and stuff, we're going to see a wide range of changes. But stick with me, folks. It's all an experiment.
Yeah, everybody's going to have a good sense of humor.
It's true. Like, wacky things are going to happen this season. Yeah. I think we all need to accept that. Like I said from the beginning, this is an ambitious season. I'm introducing a lot of things, and we're just like halfway through it right now. The next thing I'm implementing is a new flight system. Now, your skill score is already is still going to be used for flights. That's not going away. But we're adding one more thing, and that is I'm going to add a fourth flight. So there's flights 1, 2, 3, 4, and training grounds. I'm limiting how many people can be in each flight. So flight 1 is 10 players, flight 2 is 20, flight 3 is 30, and flight 4 is the remainder, whoever's left.
Gotcha.
In each of those flights, there's also going to be a minimum XP required. So it takes 50 XP to get out of the training grounds, 100 XP to get out of flight 4. And they each jump 50, basically.
I gotcha.
So by the time you get up to flight 1, I believe you need 200 XP to get in there. Or maybe it's 150. I'd have to go back and just check my notes. But regardless, what I'm trying to say is this is going to give people a chance to actually climb the ladder like they haven't been able to before. Because for some players, they finish their first season, they get out of the training grounds, and they're in flight 1. It's very possible. People do it all the time. But then their entire future in the league is just spent defending their position and trying to stay in flight 1. And that, you know, that hurts if they have a difficult round that drops them down to flight 2 and they might not be able to climb back up for a while. So this allows you to kind of have these gates. So after you get out of training grounds, the maximum you can do is flight 4. But next season, you can get the flight 3. And as long as you keep playing well, eventually you're going to land somewhere where you fit in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think it was, as I've spoken about on the podcast, I like played pretty recklessly for my first couple rounds in the league. I was really not really paying too much attention to my score and just trying to play fast, which I think is a very common thing for people that show up in the league. And you know, I've been kind of constantly improving my win rate and other things as I've been going, but I did, you know, climb up through the flight, so that felt very satisfying. So I like that you're bringing that in.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy that. I know there are going to be some people upset because there are some people who were flight 1 yesterday who are going to wake up in flight 2 tomorrow because there's only 10 slots there now, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, 20 in flight 2 and they went down to flight 3. So bear with me, folks. We're going to figure this out. We're just trying to see what happens when we implement this system. And I think it's going to be fun, especially for new players. And I think old players are going to look at it as like a new way, a new goal to strive for, is like working their way up to the next flight as opposed to just holding their rank in the current flight.
Right.
So next, we're going to have some alliance adjustments, or at least how they're scored.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a problem the last two seasons, but it did kind of come to a head to the point that other players noticed it this past season. And that is, there are alliances of, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 people. And in a given round, maybe one player from that alliance plays, and that gets them on the alliance leaderboard. I don't think there's anything wrong with like only one person in an alliance playing. I do feel like it gives you a bit of an unfair advantage against other alliances, since invariably, no matter the size of your alliance, the more people you have playing, the more difficult decisions you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still going to like contribute to your alliance's overall score, but in a round, you have to have at least 2 members from your alliance put forth games in order to be on that round leaderboard. And this counts towards Secret Wars as well. So if you don't get 2 members from your alliance playing, it's basically forfeiting that round to whoever you're up against.
That is 100% fair.
Yeah, I think it's fair too, because you're still playing on the overall board. And well, I've already gone through this, but yeah, I agree with you. I think it is fair. The next thing about alliances is, well, you can't talk about talking about Secret Wars, because I think that's been a big success the last few seasons. It's something that we can all talk about, and it's just a good like game within a game. This season is going to be set up intentionally to have some early upsets. And what I mean is, the players who have won the most are going right up against each other in round 1.
Right.
So I'll tell you right now, spoiler alert, it's going to be the Gamorons versus Ursa Major, round 1. We're going to get a really early rematch this season.
I sure hope Astronaut's coming back.
I hope you can survive whatever round you built. So we're going to see. you built your own challenge here, so we're going to see how that feels. So the intention here is to give alliances that might have like routinely not seen past round two a chance to really advance further and just get some new names further up that list for this season. And just, you know, give everyone more of a good time.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun too. Those are the big things for this season. There's always more. There are going to be some adjustments to the score sheet. For example, I have expanded an XP section on the score sheet for each round, showing like the base XP, how much bonus you got for your hero, stuff like that. So you're actually going to see that math this season so that people kind of get a better understanding of where their score comes from. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain that's going to stick around in the long term because it does take up a lot of space, but I thought it would be a good opportunity to show that example to people so people have a better understanding where it comes from so that they can better understand how it's used.
So just wrapping a quick content bow on all of this, we're going to have access to basically all of the released heroes, which will be the kind of the first time that we've actually been, usually we're about 6 months behind, I think, on
we're
average.
We're going to be right up to this month with X-Men in particular.
Yeah. So that's really fun. And then the villains that we're going to expect to see, well, we don't have to speak to what I did for round one, but just in general, you know, we're still in the middle of the Sinister Motives box.
Right. So, you can expect up to Sinister Motives. I'm not throwing any X-Men villains or modulars out yet. This is just a chance to get those heroes out of the door.
Yeah. So we'll see one, two, or three new villains from that box, inevitably.
Possibly.
And then, let's see. A conversation we had off podcast was kind of about the modulars, because actually in the current wave is when they started putting modulars in the back of the packs of the heroes.
Right.
So rounds that have a dedicated hero might be a good round to expect to see a modular from that hero as well, because that way you can kind of say, well, if everybody needs to have the Ironheart hero, then they would also all have the Ironheart modular.
I would certainly say that's possible in season 15. The reason I say that is because while someone might be locked into Ironheart this season, if they're not on the Champions team, they're playing Wolverine instead. Right. And they might not have that particular set, and then they're locked out for no reason.
Okay, so
season 15 4, certainly.
So, and maybe you don't want to totally reveal these details, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. So in choose your aspect rounds, is the idea that there would then be one hero from each of the factions?
There is, yes.
Okay, that's the plan. Okay, so then there's no round where there's just a single hero only available, and okay.
Correct. Yeah, you're going to be able to stick to your chosen team throughout.
Right. Because when I was designing this is something that was on my mind, because when I was designing the round, I was, you know, looking at some of the back of the pack ones, and then so I checked in with you about that one, and it's kind of, you know, we want to make sure that if we're putting a burden of expecting somebody to have specific content, it would be really good to make sure that kind of matched with another place where that was already happening. So again, it's I forget who the back of the pack villain was for Ironheart, but
was it Armadillo, or that was in the Nova pack, I think.
Zax was one of them, and Armadillo was the other. But anyway, that modular would show up kind of when you would also be expected to have that hero.
That'd be the fair way to introduce it, and then maybe in the future it could show up again. But that's gonna be the way we introduce it for sure.
That's also very reasonable, and it. You know, I think you were speaking to another thing that you experienced as part of season 13 design, is constraints add to creativity and are, mean you don't just kind of always pick. I know that's not how you do it necessarily, but, you know, you don't always pick your favorite thing. You know, when you add some constraints, it kind of causes you to make some different decisions than you normally would. So having these additional constraints is always good.
Always. I agree. That's how you get the best writing out of people. It's how you get the most creative things out of people, is by putting them in a box and seeing how they get out.
right. And then so you also have in our notes, you just kind of like what's coming next after season 14? We're kind of alluding to a couple things already.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see X-Men this season. We're not going to see those villains yet, but you can definitely expect them in season 15 and beyond to start seeing some mutant genesis and maybe even the Mojo Pack introduced.
And I think that Mojo Pack has actually been quite well received overall too. So I think that's 8 villains that we have access to in the near future. That's going to be really fun.
definitely. The other thing I'm looking forward to is an all-star season. It's been a while since we've had an all-star season. If you don't remember what that is, or maybe you weren't part of the league at the time, it's basically a season built entirely around the top scoring heroes in the league, or even most used. So there's a few different things that go into it, but it's the heroes that people turn to when they're looking at a difficult round most of the time. So it's Doctor Strange is always on that list, but you know what? So is Miles Morales right now. So there's going to be a lot of new All-Stars that weren't available last time we had an All-Stars round. So I'm looking forward to that showing up again.
It is fun to have that different lens on what you're encountering.
It is, and it's good to see like kind of how some of these heroes have evolved, like who's been taken off the All-Stars list and who's been added on. One thing I actually did forget to mention about season 14, and I'm just going to leave it at a few words. I'm not going to go into it too much. There will be deck building restraints. This is something we did a while back. There will be deck building restraints this season, not in round one. We'll talk more about that after round one concludes.
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited for that. I love the constraints on deck building. Again, any excuse to do things that aren't just kind of my automatic choices, because I'm not very good at defeating my own automatic choices, so I kind of need somebody else to step in and take care of that for me. So I will appreciate the deck building restrictions. I can guarantee it.
All right, we'll put you in a box and we'll see how you get out.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, do we want to talk season 14, round one?
I absolutely do.
Okay.
Do you want me? How about you go over the restraints I gave you?
So it's choose your aspect round. The hero is Scarlet Witch. As you already mentioned, this is supposed to be an intentionally difficult round, so kind of like on par with the new round three.
Yep.
And as we discussed last time we were chatting, you have this tier three list, which is the upper third of difficulty for modulars and the upper third of difficulty for villains. That's kind of the place that you want these to live. Of course, there's lots of ways to make things harder. So I could pick a trivial modular and to figure out some other way to add some difficulty, but that was kind of what you were targeting.
Correct.
And then, you wanted to check in about campaign elements, all those sorts of things. So we'll talk about all those pieces. Did I miss anything on the constraints?
No, but you did actually remind me of one thing.
Please.
And that is, I'm not going to be using campaign elements in season 14. It's been
All right.
requested for a while, so I'm going to kind of lay back on that this season.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's some boxes where I basically didn't play the campaign, so the campaign elements are like new content to me when they're there, and there's ones that I kind of only ever played the box as a campaign, and so it's like, oh, I'd really like to play without campaign elements,
I have an idea for a future season using campaign elements in a new way, so stay tuned for that.
Cool. I think personally, one of the challenges with the campaign elements is they're one of the least well playtested aspects of the game.
Oh, for sure.
And so that's a thing that it's just it's fun to experience those campaign elements, but sometimes it just feels like, this thing wasn't really very well tested.
This is way too powerful.
Yeah, it just doesn't, or things that are kind of meant to be equivalent are so far off from each other.
Agreed.
Okay. So that's setting up the match. I'm going to just kind of go through my thinking process. So I thought through what Scarlet Witch can do and doesn't do, and what will make an interesting encounter overall. She's not a hero that cares too much about flipping. I mean, basically every hero gets a larger hand size. Mystics almost care the least about flipping because they, once they can get the cape, they usually get their hand size to be the same on hero and alter ego side. So they care less about flipping than pretty much anybody, really. She plays really well in basic because she has access to all of those mystic cards. That's really strong. She has pretty good access to damage in her kit.
For sure.
Between her molecular decays and her hex bolts. So she's got 4 hex bolts and 2 molecular decays. That's, you know, Matthew Noodles and I were kind of looking at some of the kits, and, you know, that's definitely on the high end in terms of the amount of damage that you might see in somebody's kit. Chaos magic means she can cheat a card in for just flipping over some encounter cards, which means she can afford to put in some really expensive things and just kind of hope that they show up at the right time, like an Avengers Mansion. She has very mild encounter deck control with the Warp Reality event that cancels something, but not very strong. So just a tiny little bit. She has access to all the possible status effects in the game because of Hexbolt. And then because her obligations are 3 boost icons, that, you know, there's guaranteed to be some 3 boost icon cards in the deck that are going to give her access to that. Plus, she can manipulate the number of boost icons anyway. So she has access to that. So stun and confuse and tough and all that sort of stuff. She's definitely going to go through the encounter deck unless the overall scenario is pretty quick. She's definitely going to go through the encounter deck possibly multiple times. And so that's a lot of acceleration icons. So you kind of need to factor that in when you're thinking about main scheme threat. And I think that's all I had in mind. I don't know. Is there anything about Scarlet Witch, if you were to design something, that would also be on your mind?
I always try and think about like how she would perform with each given aspect, because this is going to be a choose your aspect round. So which ones are going to be the strong ones and which ones are going to be the weak ones? But we can talk about that at the end.
Right. Well, so I actually thought about it a little bit more in the context of the villains, who's kind of strong or weak to aspects. But yes, you're 100% correct. I think once we're already stuck with the hero and I'm not able to make a choice, it might be to, let's just say Scarlet Witch was terrible in protection. I might also choose a villain that was weak to protection to kind of compensate for that, perhaps. But I think Scarlet Witch doesn't care, right? She doesn't care.
She'll still be strong.
She'll still be strong. I mean, like a lot of heroes, you know, obviously leadership just kind of is great. She's got Avenger traits, so she has access to lots of great Avengers leadership cards. But, you know, there's kind of not an aspect you can look at and say she's terrible. And then so I looked at for my own preferences in part, kind of looked at the villain stuff. And so we had this tier 3 list from you. We wanted it to be a reasonable difficulty, and there are a few things on the tier 3 list that I still would consider to be easy from the perspective of if you have lots of access to damage, you might be able to get through pretty quickly. So I wanted to make sure that there was a decent amount of health, that it wasn't just too easy to get through the health.
That makes sense.
Personally, in Solo Champions League, I definitely prefer not to be interacting with the villains that have the really low main scheme thresholds, unless it's a justice only round, unless the player really has a lot of agency over making deck design decisions to deal with that. That can be pretty frustrating.
Of course.
So we'll see. Cause like I have some villains that I love that fall in that category. So in Solo Champions League, I don't love them so much, but in regular life I do. And then kind of doesn't provide large advantages or disadvantages in any of the aspects. So this kind of complements the conversation we were having about the hero with respect to the aspects. I think Scarlet Witch is fine and actually plays great in basic. So I don't want a villain that's really susceptible to one aspect, for example. I like it if there's a small number of side schemes with a really, when we're talking about a multi-aspect round, I like it when there's some side schemes that are worth summoning with one way or another, but not too many.
Of course.
So it's not a dominant strategy, but it's at least something that you could potentially choose to do. These are nice to haves, not necessaries, but that's definitely one of them, especially as a person who really likes justice. I like it when I can look at it and say, I think one way or another this might be a viable thing to do this round. And then, you know, I'm always excited to explore new content, so I'm definitely wanting to favor some new content if possible. And then also a low level of community frustration or dread toward the villain, because I don't want to take the blame for, you know, inevitably we're going to play everybody, but it's not being like, hey, Joss, like, welcome to the Venom Goblin. You know, like, I'm telling you right now, we're not doing Venom Goblin this round.
Not Nebula either?
Not Nebula, not Ronin, who you said is back in the box. So I just kind of, I definitely avoided some of the villains that fell in that category. So that's kind of where I started. I'll just run through really quick just the villains that I even glanced at, and then I'll eliminate some, and then we'll kind of see where we got to. So Ultron, Mutagen Formula, Zola, Red Skull, Thanos, Loki, Venom, Mysterio. That's my starting set. So it's about half of the tier three villains, I think. We're going to see that some of those didn't meet some of the criteria I set before, but that's kind of where we started. I don't know. Okay. Does anything jump out at you immediately?
No, nothing jumps out immediately. Those are, you know, the same places I probably would have landed. So you're in the right place.
I also actually considered Drang, but I think Drang wasn't on your tier three list. So I would have had to really crank up the difficulty for that. But
Drang would need something pretty drastic.
Yeah, but I
think
really
he's like,
that
honestly, like the lowest ranked one right now, if I remember correctly. But that's beside the point.
Yeah, I love him, and he's definitely a scenario you can pump up the difficulty on. But anyway, that's where we were at. So Drang was on the list for a second, and then I actually looked at your tier three list, and then he wasn't on the list anymore. So that was the first thing that got eliminated. And then my criterion of the main scheme not being too low in threat eliminated Ultron and Zola, because they both are threes, I think.
Yeah, they are.
Which is a shame, because I love both of those villains, actually. But I kind of feel only in a Justice Only round do they feel like you have the player agency that I want to see. I was sad to eliminate Mysterio, because his health is just a bit too low.
Okay.
Like, if he's not throwing a bunch of stuff in your deck to slow you down, you can kind of burst through him pretty fast. And
you can.
And she can do it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Thanos was just barely over a season ago, so that's like a little too recent, I think. And then we've played a crap ton of Red Skull and Mutagen, because they've basically been around since the beginning, more or less.
Right.
So I realize people aren't able to do all this accounting in their head, but that leaves us with Loki and Venom.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay. So I'm going to give you... I'm going to give you my Venom round first.
Okay.
And then I'm going to tell you why we're not playing it.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. But I really enjoyed this round, because I played a little bit of each of the things I cooked up just to make sure I wasn't missing anything kind of obvious. So Venom is tricky because it's very swingy. Very, very high variance. Those boost effects that are built into his deck and built into the symbiote, whatever his forced modular is. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of boost effects in those already. And he has an almost Ronin-like thing that can show up and you get attacked in the same round. And so it's pretty, you know, it's pretty tricky. Sometimes it can go really easily and really well, and sometimes it can go really poorly, because you just that time that you did take the three boost cards, it was really, really bad. So what I wanted to do was reduce that variance a little bit, so I picked things that had no boost effects in them, but that otherwise upped the challenge of the scenario itself. So reduce the variance a little bit, but up the challenge. And so I picked the Wrecking Crew modular from the Hood. With nice big villains.
Minions.
Yeah. So our nice big minions, they all have villainous. There's a little bit of overkill in there, all sorts of good stuff, right? You can really hose yourself with that one, because there's Yeah, there's ways that they can kind of show up when you don't anticipate and then scheme against you when you flip and all sorts of other things. But it was a really fun round, actually. So I'll give this one to you as one to look at and at least scratch your chin over in the future. But I eliminated it for two reasons. And the first is Venom is very susceptible. In their design, they made a weird choice, and Critical Encounters actually did an episode on it this week, so I was thinking about it even more. But he's very susceptible to damage that isn't coming from attacks, because when you attack him with anything you control, he gets the extra boost cards. So if you're able to do damage without that, then he doesn't get it. And of course, Scarlet Witch, because of Hexbolt, has great access to that kind of damage.
She does, yeah, for sure.
So I felt like, no, when we play Venom, I want Venom to, like, you have to actually play Venom. I don't want any of this nonsense where you can do a bunch of damage to Venom and cheat your way to victory. So that was the first problem.
It would be a poor introduction to him, for sure.
It would be a poor introduction. And then second, because it is a choose-your-own-aspect round, Protection has this benefit of being able to do quite a bit of damage without actually doing attacks. So Protection can be a little cheaty, and Scarlet Witch can be a little cheaty. So felt like, nah, this isn't quite how I want to see Venom. I want to see Venom in a multi-hero round, an aspect that can't cheat, with heroes that don't have, like, Venom Blast from Miles Morales or something like that.
Okay.
So I think it's a really fun round. I don't think this is the right round for it, though. Okay. So there goes Venom. We got Loki. I've got two versions of Loki. I have a mild preference for one of them, but I might get you to help me make the final decision on it.
Okay.
So one is a slightly more punishing option. And what I overall, what I wanted to do with Loki, Loki is, you know, a reasonably challenging villain. And standard actually doesn't change much about his overall challenge, because in expert, you just have to defeat him three times and you get those three extra cards in the expert pack. And that's about it. But by the time you're on the third version of Loki, the chance that you're going to lose or have anything especially bad happen. Yeah. So standard versus expert Loki is actually not radically different in difficulty. And, you know, especially with Scarlet Witch, because she's just, you know, quite powerful and has a pretty good economy. You can kind of mostly hide behind chump blockers, because other than the Infinity Gauntlet that discards an ally, there's not a lot of stuff that messes with your chump blocking strategies in Loki. So contrary to how I usually think about things, I was like, no, we got to make this so that you have to actually she's powerful enough, you should have to actually think twice about the choices you're making with chump blocking and all those other things. You need to worry about your health. You need to worry about overkill damage showing up all of a sudden. Now, I didn't pick doing standard two or anything like that, but what I did is the punishing option is the Kree Militants in modular. So
okay,
this is a modular for people who don't have it on the tip of their tongue. It has 9 cards. 8 of them have boost effects. 3 of those boost effects are making the attack have piercing, which against Scarlet Witch, ooh, who will try to hide behind the tops that she can give to herself. Okay, that's punishing. Loki doesn't necessarily hit super hard all the time, because his attack and schemes kind of ebb and flow between versions, and there is a 4 boost icon card in there, so like he can hit hard, but he doesn't necessarily always hit hard anyway. So 3 of them have piercing, 3 of them have give the attack overkill. And the minions are all pretty big. They're all 5 to 7health, and they're all annoying. And then to go with this, because it's 2 modulars for Loki, I partnered State of Emergency, which is, again, kind of an annoying, but in a way I like, sort of modular, which is, I think, 4 different side schemes that all have 3 threat and then an annoying when revealed effect, like discard a card or something like that.
Yeah. And, okay.
So that's my That's my more punishing option. It's very feasible. The only issue I experienced when I tried it was you can get stuck behind having to defeat one of those stupid big minions every single round and not make very fast progress. Because you got to like molecular decay them every round, which costs 4 altogether, and so it doesn't leave you with a lot of resources to do anything else. So it can really make you feel like your progress is really slow. So this is my less preferred one. I think it's definitely the harder one, but I think it's my less preferred one.
Okay.
My more preferred one, which is probably a little bit higher variance, but not one that you're going to get stuck behind things to quite the same degree, is. And you already have introduced for those of us who are patrons and are playing your hero round, we're dealing with this modular at the moment, is the Whispers of Paranoia.
Okay.
So Whispers of Paranoia is a very fun, very disruptive modular set. It does things like pulls out your nemesis minion or your nemesis side scheme. Does things like if an ally gets defeated by an attack, you have to take indirect damage equal to its cost. So it punishes chump blocking, but in a slightly different way. And there's a 1 damage to everything boost effect, which is everybody's worst nightmare.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So this is it. This is kind of... compared to the regular Loki, this is a replacement for Enchantress, right? It's doing similarly annoying things to really be disruptive with you.
I'm going to tell you right now, what I love about this setup already is the thematic nature of just like 2 magic wielders versus one another, and one of them's using illusions, which is exactly what Loki does, so I love it.
Yeah. Well, no, I was like, oh, I should actually just throw both of Mysterio's ones.
Okay.
In there. But I want to see some minions too. So the other one is Band of Badoon, which we have seen. This is a little bit older. It's 10 cards. Everything has boost effects, but only 2 of them are actually kind of bad. The rest of them are just kind of mild annoyances, like bring a 2 health minion out and stuff like that. There are two that give overkill. So from a boost effect standpoint, it's like a very much toned down version of Cream Militants, but then Whispers of Paranoia brings in a few more boost effects that do some of the other stuff from that. So there's kind of still a handful of things that every turn when you're making your decisions about blocking or if you're going to do tough or whatever, it's a little bit tricky. And the thing that's neat about Loki is because he kind of ebbs and flows between having Stalwart and not. Your status effects that you have access to are sometimes useful and sometimes not. And you have access to tough, but that's not always going to do everything you need to do. So I think this one makes the challenge, I think there's some variance in there, but I think it's manageable because Scarlet Witch is pretty powerful. The thing that's important about Loki is it is safe to flip against him unless he's got his 3 scheme
out
and some other stuff. But his in general, things would have to go pretty bad for flipping stuff over for you to be clean, flip, and then have the entire thing scheme through. So it is safe when you get yourself into trouble. It can be safe to flip.
Okay.
So that's what I came to. I'm favoring the second one, but I'm willing to talk about the first one.
I'm going to tell you right now, I am also favoring the second one. I can already, because let's remember, this is a narrative season, and I can already see the first act of the story playing out with what you've built there. And I'm really excited to see how that plays out.
Right, so this is Loki showing up with a bunch of aliens that he led onto Earth.
Yeah,
with his bag of illusion tricks.
Getting like a one-on-one with Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, it excites me. I really like that one.
All right, so that was really fun, by the way. I appreciate it. I'm sure, I'm absolutely certain you carefully consider everything, but I'm also sure you don't usually give one round quite as much attention as I did.
No, I've got to build 5, so.
I had all the time in the world, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked hearing your thought process. You definitely went deeper than I normally do. I don't test every possible combination. I kind of like land somewhere and say, okay, maybe I'll give one test, but this is probably going to be it. And I really like that you had the opportunity to do that, because it definitely brought in some thoughts that maybe I wouldn't normally have. But this was great, and I think we should probably do it again sometime.
You know I will love to do that. Fact. Anything to add? I wasn't going to propose any campaign elements, and you already said you weren't planning on having them anyway, so that we've met easily on that.
Yeah, that's something I'm already doing this season, and Loki being at like the end of his campaign has a whole bunch of things that can happen, so that just throws a lot of possibilities out there. I noticed that you definitely got your favorite Infinity Gauntlet in there. you didn't mention if that was a factor or not.
No, I mean, let me tell you, I considered giving Venom the Infinity Gauntlet as well. So.
Oh, man. Okay.
But I did not. I was having some thematic trouble with giving Venom the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, I know. That's a weird place to start a story. So Venom has the Infinity Gauntlet. And Okay. Yeah, I'm really excited to play this out. I think you've built something really solid here. I think it's going to be fun for people to play. I think the story's going to be fun for people to think about. And I'm really looking forward to it.
And I will not mind the criticism from anybody who falls victim to the variance that this is definitely higher variance than I would usually be excited to play personally.
I'm actually really surprised you picked Loki, because I know you didn't particularly enjoy him last time, but that might be just because we had him on Expert and he had to do it three times and such.
Yeah, and it was really in the middle of, you know, I think it was the same round we played Hela, or it wasn't too far away from having played
Hela. It might have been the same season, yeah. That might have been the season we introduced that box.
Yeah, and it was just, it really felt like we got, again, because I'm a person who really enjoys practicing and I usually try every single aspect of our hero at least twice. So I really play it a lot before I even really make my decision. It just kind of drags on so much. So that was, three Lokis and the big Hela quest. It was just too much.
That's a draining season. I agree.
But Loki's fun. I do find him quite fun. It's just, he doesn't even actually need to have three. That's all.
Yeah, there should have been something different. I know we've had this discussion before, I think when he showed up last time, but something different should have been done to make him expert as opposed to just do it again.
Yeah, well, but the thing is that they're still doing that with some stuff, right? So mansion attack in the Mutant Genesis box is also just the number of ones that are there. I mean, the thing I really like they did in Sinister Motives is they had a bunch of cards that had extra effects if you were playing expert mode.
Right.
I love that. I think that's a great way to introduce some difficulty into a thing in a different way than just making villain 1, 2, and 3.
Definitely.
All right. Anything else on that one? Or are we at super secret announcement time?
You know, I think we're good. I think round one is built. You heard it here first. It's going to be starting this weekend. So if you want to start practicing now, you already know the whole setup.
Yeah. Is your super secret announcement that we're probably going to meet each other at Con of Heroes?
No, it's not. It's not that. But, you know, I am really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to actually seeing you in person.
Yeah.
All right. So you want super secret announcement?
Of course.
All right. I am sorry. I'm just going to start that off. If everyone's expecting something League related, because it's not League related. So sorry about all the hype. But there is something big going on. There really is. And I want to shout it from a mountaintop. And Joss, you've got the largest mountaintop available to me here.
Okay.
All right. This coming August, I'm going to be a dad.
Exciting.
Yep. Yep, this would be mine and my wife's first child.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Yeah, so that's my big announcement. I'm very excited.
Congratulations.
I have a lot on my mind, and I can't wait. I really can't.
So you're going to have to figure out how to get rid of some of the responsibilities you have a little bit.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe I have to build a few seasons out ahead of time and then just like hope it automates itself, right? But yeah, you might have to delegate some stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, I'm very excited for you. It's an amazing ride. I have a 17-year-old that is like blowing my mind in good ways and bad ways all the time. And I have a 12-year-old who's usually only blowing my mind in good ways. So
that's good. That's good. Someday.
Well, thank you for sharing. And I'm very delighted that you wanted to share this with the community. I know I've definitely had lots of people share kind of within the Discord when they're having kids and lots of people that are kind of very excited to greet that new parent into the fold, and it's definitely an exciting ride.
Definitely. I'm hoping so.
Well, it's an exciting ride. There's no way around that. So any other things you want to bring up before we say goodbye?
I'm good. Like I said, like we've already talked about, I'll be at Con of Heroes. I'm also working on being at some other conventions throughout the year. So I'll definitely talk about that as they come closer. I'll be at one in State College, Pennsylvania. If you're in the middle of Pennsylvania next weekend, I'll be there at Happy Valley Comic Con. So that'll be my first convention I'll actually have my own booth at. So that's new and exciting.
Oh, that is very. Did you get a sign made?
Not yet. I have some work ahead of me still. I have to make a sign. I'm going to have some of my, some league merchandise there as well as some of my other play mats. And I'm just trying to advertise the league and get some people involved.
Oh my God. That's so exciting.
It is really exciting.
Okay. Yeah. I'm probably going to a local convention in the very near future as well, when I haven't been to one for years. So I'm also looking forward to that, but I'm not hawking anything. Just being present.
That's fine. I might regret it. Who knows? Maybe I just want to be present.
It is exhausting, right? I mean, I think that's the thing you always hear from people who work cons, right? It's really exhilarating, but you know, it's exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
But if you're the kind of person who loves meeting people, it's just, you know, what a fun way to spend a weekend.
I'm sure I'll be exhausted after the first day and have two more to go. But I am really looking forward to it, and I'm hoping that as I get to go to more conventions and other places, I get to meet even more people. So that's the idea, at least.
Yeah. Right. Get a network going and all those other good things.
That's right.
Amazing. Innsmouth Bear, thank you so much for coming on. I always love these chats.
You know what? I really do too. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed listening to you build that round and hearing like some of the same thoughts I've had, but also different thoughts. I'm looking forward to doing more stuff like that in the future with you.
Yeah, very fun. And I you just hold on to that Venom round. It's a good one.
It's in the back of my mind.
It's a good one. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the Road to Nowhere.